Okay. Got it. All right. Oh. Oh. I just sent him an email to call you at the 800. We're trying to get John Barber. Okay. Does he have... He's got email, so he should get my email, in which I'm asking him to call you at the 800.
I understand, but he told me to call you or have you... I'm supposed to call him on his cell.
The hell? All right, I don't know where it is, but let me look. Hold on, I'll look. All right, this is real radio, friends. We're putting it together for you, so hang on. John Barber is standing by. I don't need that book. I don't need that book. I got to find the right annual book. I got to look for John's cell phone number. Hang on. Is it monsoons in Las Vegas? All right. Can you hear me, Todd? I got it. Can you hear me? I guess not. Okay, here's... I can't do this over the air, can I? All right, I'll email it to you. Hold on. Okay. And, well, it's amazing we get away with as much as we do, I guess. John Cell. Yeah, if I said it out loud, then the secret would be out. Let's see. 9 4 9 8.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
I don't know how this started to happen the last 2 or 3 months, but I answer Skype on my computer when the phone rings and I see me and I don't hear anything. I just don't, and it's happened for the last 3 months. Of course, 8-year-olds know more about techie stuff than I do. And
me too. Same thing.
You call my home phone, which doesn't work. It's just you got my cell phone now. Thank goodness. So
yeah, I sent it to Todd. He should be calling you on your cell, or are you on your cell right now?
Well, if you can hear me. As I hear you, you're on my cell, and I would hate to miss you. I missed you last month. I don't want to miss you again.
I know. I cried for 3 damn days. Thank you.
Well, also, it makes my day. It makes my night. It makes my week. And it helps make my life a little more enjoyable when I talk to you, and especially tonight. I was really impressed by Dean.
Dean was on his game, for sure. Boy, he was knocking him out of the park. Yeah.
The two people who still knows who Gaddafi was and knew why and knew that Gaddafi lived in a tent. Sadly, he didn't explain why Gaddafi lived in a tent, but the reason he lived in a tent was very few people knew.
He
refused to build a home for himself until every citizen of Libya had a home to live in.
Yeah, he was a visionary.
And the other thing, the reason he was done in was the same reason that they were trying to do in Castro, the same reason they succeeded in doing in Allende, is because these successful revolutionary socialists would be setting a bad example on how to share the wealth.
Mm-hmm.
How to give everyone a free education, free health. You know, in the United States, there are about 150 American soldiers who can't get into VA hospitals every month who go to Cuba to be treated. And then there are about 200 cancer victims in this country where it's so expensive they go to Cuba to be treated. And the other thing about Gaddafi was, like a number of successful revolutionaries who aren't murdered by us. He was dropping the U.S. dollar as what they were going to trade in, and they were going to trade in gold.
Gold dinar. Well, Saddam Hussein tried the same thing. He wanted to establish his own backed currency.
That's why they did him in also. He was going to trade currency that was gold, as was Gaddafi. And what came out of what happened to Gaddafi revealed in just six simple words how god-awful evil the United States establishment is. When Hillary Clinton got on television and said, "We came, we saw, we killed, and
immortal,
tackled."
Yeah, and immortal, immortal evil.
Yeah. Dean brought up Bernie Sanders, and Bernie was the only politician to whom I've ever sent money or jokes, because he was the only one who was really bringing up the real important issues in this country about health, about fraud, about Wall Street, about bankers.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, and the media, which is more important to me than anything, is that we have a free press, which we do not have now. And in 2006, he never used any of my jokes, sadly, which might have helped, because when I wrote jokes for the black chief of police in Los Angeles, it helped him become the first black mayor when he beat Sam Yorty, and we were for a friend forever thereafter. But in any event, I sent him a note. It was during
the debate.
Tom Bradley. Yeah, because when I was doing the AM show, Jeff, he called me when he was chief of police, which was a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "John, do you still do stand-up?" And I said, "No, I don't have time. I'm doing my show." He said, "Well, do you do write jokes of any kind anymore?" And I said, "Yes, I do." Because he said, "I heard that Jane Fonda had you writing stuff for her husband, Tom Hayden. He got elected." And I said, "Well, yes, it was a request, and I filled it." And he said, "Well, I'm not funny. As you can tell by the way I talk, I never can tell a joke. I can never do anything funny. But I do know the little humor is required in order to get by now in politics," because he said all politics is a joke. And I said, "Well, Mr. Mayor, that's a funny line." But he said, "Would you write some stuff for me?" And I said, "Well, listen, the best thing for me to do, Mr. Bradley, is, since you can't really say a joke, Yorty's attacking you unmercifully. He's doing everything but calling you an Uncle Tom Bradley." And he chuckled and he said, "I know." And I said, "So the best thing you could do is just give a response to what he is saying." So I said, "Send me the six worst things that he's been saying to the Los Angeles Times and the local news about you, and I'll give you very short replies." So he sent them. And within 5 minutes, I mean, it was so easy. I wrote them, sent them back, and he was absolutely thrilled. So when the election came by, I tuned in to watch to see how he was going to handle himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he never uttered a word. He did not utter a word. And he lost. He lost badly. So
he didn't use your material. You're breaking up a little bit. He didn't use anything. That's you saying.
No, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, but you break up a little bit once in a while. I miss a word here and there. It's okay. It's okay. Don't worry about it. So Tom Bradley had this gift of gold from one of the modern masters of the idea of comedy and jokes, and he didn't use it. Damn. All right. I think we're calling. I'm going to guess here that Todd is calling John back on his cell phone. So, Uncle John, if... Yeah, okay. We're working on it. We got to get there. He was dropping out a little bit here and there, which I think you could all hear. That's a funny story. Tom Bradley, and I'd give anything to see those six comebacks. And he didn't use them. See, Tom was a very stoic kind of a... Most of you people don't remember Tom Bradley, but he was a very stoic kind of a boring guy. And that would have really changed things. You gotta show a human side. You gotta be sometimes funny, sometimes irreverent. You gotta learn how to mock things correctly, not viciously, and laugh at the barbs and the arrows that are shot at you all the time when you're in the public eye. Bradley was he's an okay guy, as I remember. But that's a funny story. Sam Yorty had the voice of a gravelly old bulldog. Not something you'd want to have as a public relations instrument. But it worked. It worked. These people almost all, I would exclude Tom Bradley, but they all have stories. And if they were ever to tell their truth, they'd all be absolutely fabulously funny and shocking to read. It's like all the people in D.C. If you heard last night Susan Bradford, and I've put her broadcast up at the top of headlines, which will be up shortly. It's the number one story. You want to hear research? You want to hear reality? Susan served it up last night in spades. It's all there. And it's actually quite dangerous for her to be revealing this kind of information. And it's up to you. Do with it what you will. You remember the Trump-Abramoff thing? You know, she goes into that in some detail and talks about Mar-a-Lago and the raid, and it's fascinating. So take and listen. If you heard it last night, she does talk rapidly, and you might have missed some of the things that are key. So I would say if you've got an extra 48 minutes somewhere during the day and you want to really be educated, listen to that program. I put it up there for free. It's there. So we're good. All right. Todd is still working. I wonder if Johnny... Hello, Johnny.
Oh, I'm so sorry about these technical problems. I'm just going to have to take... You know what? I'm going to have to do the nights that we're going to do the show before 6 o'clock, quarter to 6, I'm going to have to call on your Skype to make sure, because on Skype this connection great. Now, when you talk on my phone, I hear you. Well, you've got a nicer voice than mine, so it comes through better. But I hear you great now. Can you hear me?
What did you say, John? Of course I hear you. Of course okay. I hear you. You're fine.
Okay, so now
and
back
don't,
to Tom
yeah,
Bradley.
don't hesitate to call early unless somebody else is on Skype and you can't. But go ahead and call in. Absolutely.
Well, okay. So then, quickly about Tom Bradley, he called up and he apologized profusely and he said, "But I'm not going to give up the run." He said, "Will you still help me?" And I said, "Well, if I'm still here, I will." I don't know why I said that. It was kind of prophetic, because a couple of months later, I got fired when I tried to book Jim Garrison on my show after I read his book, Heritage of Stone, and I was gone. But Tom called me at home, and he said, oh, he and his family were so sorry to see me and go and all their friends. It was really sweet. He said, but you still think you could help me? And I said, I can help you now because I've had more time to look at the news and listen to Yorty. And I said, the worst thing he's saying to you, Tom, if you don't mind my calling you Tom, he said, no, not at all. I said, the worst thing he's saying to you, he's implying that if you get elected, there will be crime in the streets. In other words, he's implying that blacks will run amok in the streets. So he says, that's true, and I don't know what to say. So I said, well, I'm going to tell you what to say, plus the four or five other things, and you use them. He said, I promise I will. I promise I will. So I sent him the lines, and they had this big debate. Yeah. And Tom looked great, and he looked a little bit looser. And then, of course, Bradley said, I mean, Jordy, he said, again, if Tom, and he never would say Bradley or the chief of the police, it was always Tom, like it was short for Uncle Tom. If Tom becomes mayor, there will be crime in the street. And Bradley is just staring at him. And you could sense the nervousness of the newsman. And Tom doesn't say a word because I instructed him just to stare at him like Jack Benny. So he did. And then finally one of the newsmen said, Mr. Bradley, Chief, what do you say to Tom Yorder saying if you're elected, there'll be crime in the streets? And Bradley looked right at the newsman like he was Jack Benny and said, of course it will be, because Yorty has to have someplace else to conduct his business. There was a huge applause from newsmen who were supposed to be indifferent. And, of course, Tom was overwhelmingly elected. And I'll tell you,
that's hilarious.
When I joined the Wilshire Country Club and they wanted references, I called them and I said, would you write a reference? He doesn't play golf, but he does live in Hancock Park. So he wrote me a reference. And now one day, Sarita and I were driving down Ventura Boulevard and some car went through a light and crashed us. Hit us hard on the side. Oh. And we got out of the car, and there were two guys in plain clothes. And what they were they were cops. Oh. And they were undercover cops, and they were chasing a hooker and her pimp, okay, and bashed into us and apologized profusely for what they had done. And they gave me a business card, and they said, well, you contact us, and we'll pay for all the expenses. Now, fortunately, we didn't say we were hurt or anything like that, but the half of the car was gone. The sides were gone. One side was totally gone.
Right.
So the next day, I call the police department and the number, and I leave my name. But I'm not on television anymore. I get a call 2 days later. Mr. Barber, the detective said that you people were at fault and we're not going to be paying this. Yes, honest to God. So what I did, I said, could you please give me your name and the name of the two? I had the name of one officer. I have his card. I don't have the other. So they gave me their name. And I sat down and I wrote a letter to Tom, the mayor, for God's sake. I said, this is what happened. The next day, they picked up my car and totally repaired it. So,
that's pretty funny.
He reminded me. Speaking of fun, oh, my God. I thought you were going to ask me what it's like in Las Vegas for the last 2 weeks.
Well, I understand you've gotten 48 inches of rain, 6 feet of snow, and Lake Mead is full.
Oh, listen, let me tell you something. This is how Lake Mead could be full. It varies between 104 and 110. I mean, it is so hot. How hot is it? When Satan is trying to reprimand some of the bad boys in hell, he said, if you don't behave, I'm sending you to Vegas. Because up here, I mean, in hell, you just have to deal with the heat. Up here, you have to deal with heat, the humidity. I mean, it is so bad. Oh, I'm telling you, you could.
You don't get humidity there. I don't know where all this moisture is coming from. I understand what's going on there. I worked there for 3 years, as you know.
I, I'm going to tell you something like that about that in a minute, about when you worked here, too. I thought about you. Oh, I think about you all the time when I think about old Vegas. But if you, we have 3 million people here now. If you want to fill, blame me, just fill quart bottles with their perspiration and dump it into Lake Mead. Oh, it is gone. It's Florida. It's not. Okay, so now when you worked here, and you remember, and I remember, that you could drive down the Las Vegas Strip. There might have been 24 billboards on the Strip.
Sure.
On every one of those billboards was an act headlining either in the showroom or in the lounge.
Yep.
I mean, the lounge acts were not good enough to get into the showroom. And there is a Pete Barbuti and Keely Smith, and then there's Don Rickles. I mean, these are major acts who were not good enough to be on the main stage. That,
those were the golden days of Las Vegas main room entertainment. Yeah.
Yes, you and I. Well, I'm a lot older than you, but my wife and I talk about it often. We have lived through the golden age of America, and especially American entertainment, from the 40s through the 60s, and then it was over with. Now, if you go down the Strip, you will see 30 or 40 billboards still. Mm-hmm. There'll be one dozen with pictures of chefs you never heard of. And the other two dozen are for erectile dysfunction.
Come on. Really?
Honest to God, I should take a picture. Oh, my God, if you were on camera, oh, you and I could have such a blast. And the other thing is that when you comment on the fact about the homeless, they were changing the name of the homeless.
Yeah, they outlawed the word homeless. That's how they're going to take care of it.
Yeah, well, you and I talked about this 3 months ago when I was on The Tonight Show with Sinatra. I believe it was 1979. Mm-hmm. He asked if I would do his favorite bit, and I said, well, I'll do whatever you want. And mm-hmm. it's only about a minute and a half long, 2 minutes mm-hmm. long. You can see it if you go to my site, johnbarbersworld.com, Sinatra and hosts a Tonight Show with John Barber. It's a two-minute bit on how the government does not change the problems. They changed the names of the problems, and it got an ovation.
Of course.
It got an ovation was over, and if I had known that you might mention that tonight, I would have hunted it down and sent it to you. But I've got to tell you a cute story, and
Have you seen, what? Hold the, don't lose your thought. Cute story.
Okay.
But I just want to ask you, have you seen the deluge of Elvis stuff that's been out lately? They got this movie out. It's
yes,
everywhere.
With the movie. It is absolutely everywhere. It's people wanting to go to the past when they could be entertained. And I, you know, sadly, I have no interest in seeing that. But today, isn't it interesting, you mentioned the past. I joined nothing. The only reason I joined the Writers Guild is because I had to. And, you know, mm-hmm. some people died in forming the Writers Guild mm-hmm. because the owners did not want the writers to have a union. That unions were always...
I know.
And the same with the Screen Actors Guild. I joined them because God bless them. And right now, I get a very, very, very substantial pension from both the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors Guild. But today, I joined a group for the first time, and the group was called Sanford and Son.
Yeah.
They have 22,000 members mm-hmm. and
social media.
Social media. And a couple of people contacted me and said, will you please join, because your videos of Red are fantastic, your stories of Red are fantastic. So I posted. Now, one of the things they do not let you do on all of these sites, I mean, whether it's book sites or old actor sites or old movie sites, they don't want you to put up your site because they don't want you promoting a book or a film or anything. And I said, well, I will only join the site if I'm allowed to put up my site so people can see the clips of Red Fox, because I was the first one to put them on entertainment television, which led to Sanford and Son. He also tells stories about his friendship with Malcolm X and how they went to jail together. And he ad-libbed the funniest line ever in the history of television. And I roasted him, and I was the first one. He wanted me on the Diaz to roast him, even though Greg Garrison, who ran the Dean Martin show, did not ever want me back on the show because he would not, because he could not date Sarita. And I don't want to tell you that
story. I know, you told me that story. That's a despicable measure of this man.
Yeah, I told you that story. So they caved in, and they let me join, and they let me post it. But I want to tell you this little story of a
You had a cute story you were going to get to. But this is
it, and
right?
It's about the strangest bottle of wine I ever got. And I just got it today. One of my friends is about 55 years of age. He is unhappily married, and he has one child. He's black, as I said, but he's a manager at one of the hotels. And off and on for about 8 months, he's had this very wealthy black widow girlfriend with two or three children who lives in Chicago. Her father had invented something or wrote something, and she's very, very rich. And they met once, and they had sex, and it was so good. But in 8 months, they hadn't met again. So they've had phone sex. Now, I don't know how people have phone sex, but anyway, they had phone sex. But now she's getting really bitchy and uppity and nasty to him, and I play golf with him. He's very, you know, so I hear these stories all the time. He said, John, do you think he could do me a favor? And I said, sure, what is it? He says, you know, I don't speak very well and I don't write very well, but my girlfriend fancies herself as some kind of poet, even though she really has had nothing published, and she doesn't work. And
now this is the one who turned into a bitch after 8 or 9 months, right? You didn't see it.
You're gonna read my mind. Oh my God! So anyway, he said to me, "Would you do me a favor?" And I said, "What?" He said, "Since she fancies herself a kind of poet, and once in a while I've read a funny poem or couplet on your Facebook, could you write a short little poem for me that comes from me to her?" And I said, "Hold it. You want me to be your Byron? You want me, want me to be your Cyrano de Bergerac?" He said, "Who the fuck is Cyrano de Bergerac? And who is Byron?" I said, "Well, hold it. She would probably know. One was a poet and one spoke for somebody else. It's a wonderful movie. Okay, go look up the movie and watch it." He said, "Would you do that for me?" And I said, "Okay, since I get a kick out of it."
People have no problem asking you for favors.
Wow. No, they don't. And it, when it comes to word, I don't mind. So this is what I wrote, and it's signed by him. "Every person I ever met who was lucky enough to inherit enormous wealth, each and every one only had to worry about his or her mental health. The reason, I believe, they never had to work a day in their life to feed their kids or pay the rent.
all they had to do was check their Morgan Stanley or bank or trust and take a little of what mommy had paid. And so she sent back a note.
He sent it to her. Okay.
Yeah, he sent it to her. And she said, "You are something like you. You are totally a total and total nut, and I am going to absolutely kick you in the butt." Okay, that was it. It wasn't important. Okay. So he calls me back and he said, "She replied. She replied." Now they had been having a hard time. So he said, "Can you give me another note to send her?" So I said, "Okay, and this is the last one." He said, "Okay, okay." So this went up. "A broken bone hurts, yet it will definitely heal. But a broken heart's a deeper pain you may forever feel." No, I like that. He liked
that's
it too.
That,
so he,
no, I like yeah. that. Yeah, yeah.
Back and no, "You are not a hit, you are total shit."
Oh, clever stuff.
As you said, she was turning into a bitch. So he said, "You know, God damn it," he said, "I'm so angry. I really like her, but she's getting now. What should I say now?" And I said, "Listen, she's always going to get the last word." He said, "No, I want the last word." I said, "Listen, I'm not writing another poem." He said, "Well, can you write me something?" "Okay," I said, "I'll write you this. Okay, you can send her this. She'll appreciate this. When Martin Luther King looked to the heavens and said, 'Free at last, thank God I'm free at last,' he was talking about breaking up a love affair."
Well,
he got back a note, and the note said, "Oh, something about, oh my God, oh, hold on, she said, 'Prose from you is what I should hear, because you made me smile ear to ear.' And so he went out and bought me a bottle of the greatest wine." And he said they've been having naughtiness on the phone again. So, anyway, oh, my God.
Oh, John. John.
Well, it's true. You know, sometimes, Jeff, speaking of poetry or poems or rhyming, sometimes I get upset about something or I get happy about something, and instead of expressing it in prose, for some reason, I do it in rhyme. And I never used to do that before, except for Sinatra when he was doing special material in a song. And I ran across two that I wrote, and I hope you don't mind if I read them to you. Then there's an important one I really want to read to you. Right. So this one is, "In my long, lucky life, I have two observations. The only one that makes life totally great, more than money or fame, is to have a partner that is, no matter what, the perfect mate. The other observation is to avoid the two kinds of inhumans who make our planet much worse. They are nearly every politician or religious zealot proven so far to be happiness's curse." I like that.
Nailed that one, too. You nailed it.
Okay. Now, this was caused because one of my friends has a child who's kind of autistic and failing. Oh, my gosh. And such a nice, nice kid. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'd write something just for him. And this is what it is. "Why is it a gifted teen is taken ill, then suddenly not there? Because it is obvious, my friend, this life is obviously not fair. While warmongering politicians and unjust judges linger till they have gray hair, it's because, as you know, politics and law are like life, and life is not fair. Why is it in a world of plenty to millions of children the cupboard is bare? Because at too many rich men's tables, they have no desire to share, proving again life is not fair. And every day we see millions of homeless and millions with nothing to wear. Some have just given up, while many millionaires above do not care, both knowing that life is just not fair. When one sees all these injustices and the humanity, it makes one wonder if there's a God who does care. Or is it his or hers or its design to test us in a life that is not fair? There you go.
Wow, that's publishable. Very
good. Oh, well, it's just on my side, but I'll tell you what I think is publishable.
Let me ask you a quick question. Hold on.
Sure.
Who was it that said, rule number one, life isn't fair? Who said that? I can't remember.
God, if anybody, I would have to say Mark Twain, because I posted today one of Mark Twain's best quotes. He said, the best 2 days in a man's life are the day he is born and the day he discovers why. I mean, God,
that's pretty heavy stuff. Yeah, he
it is,
that.
Because, how many of us go a long way before we find out what we were solely meant for? But here is my all-time favorite. I put it on YouTube, and I sent it to you. And it's about one of the most underreported major stories in the last 100 years on this continent. And you may be well aware of it, because you're aware of everything, and that is Pope Francis's visit to Canada. For the Pope to visit Canada or any place at any time is major news. But why Pope Francis was visiting Canada, do you know why?
I did a couple of days ago, then I was overwhelmed and I can't remember. But I know he was up there. Yeah.
He was up there to apologize to Canada's Indians.
That's right. The indigenous
for
people.
For 150 years of abuse, which was tolerated and encouraged by the Canadian government. Now, it's enough that he just visit the place, but now he's apologizing to millions for what the Catholic Church had done. Now, I had enormously strong feelings about it, about the fact that it wasn't being reported. I was looking all over for it. I couldn't find it anywhere. I found one or two lines. I think I found one line in Joe Satilli's News Vandal, but it didn't explain anything. Nothing on PBS, nothing on CBS or NBC. And I don't like to watch the news, but I was trying to find it. So I wrote one, put myself on camera, along with photographs to prove what I was saying, put it on YouTube, and I sent a copy to you. Did you get it?
When did you send it? In the last half an hour?
No, I sent it a week ago when I did it. You were one of the first people I sent it to, because you're one of the first people I know who knows everything. So obviously you're so... I mean, my God, how you get around to doing all that you do is totally beyond me. Swamped. So can I read it to you?
Oh, you better. I must have it here. I must have it somewhere.
Yes, you do. You have the YouTube there. I mean, you can put it up and tell folks that you have a column that has some of my stuff on it, some of the talking movie. But you can put it in that column. So are you ready for this?
Yeah, okay. Do this. Send it to me again in YouTube. I've got some AOL thing here that I got from you. I don't know what the hell this is. Anyway, just send it again if you can. But go ahead and read it, please.
Okay. This year, Pope Francis's arrival in Canada to apologize to the country's native Indians was heralded by most Catholics as great. The apology is for 150 years of horrifying sexual and physical abuse and deaths of children
genocide.
In Catholic schools, and is 15 decades too late. Like birds of prey, the priests swept across the land and from loving native families plucked their screaming sons and daughters away. They put them in hundreds of these satanic schools, cut their hair, and beaten if one word of their own language they did say. The church had absolutely no interest in them as humans. All they were doing was inhumanly scavenging the helpless for more Christian souls. It is impossible to imagine when one looks at the Holocaust, horror of it all, that this was one of God's goals. When one of these children died from loneliness, neglect, or hunger, the priests forced the still living children to bury them in the barren ground. For years and years, the family searched for their bones, but the priests had markers removed so the bones could never be found. And for those years, the families pleaded with every pope to help, and of their pleas, every pope did tire. But not Pope Francis. He began to see the light when the outraged families began to set his damn schools on fire. So he went to Edmonton, hat and Bible in hand, apologizing truly, sincerely in English, Latin, Inuit, and possibly even Chinook. But one thing that was obviously missing, as many of the thousands of the survivors did say from his hand, was a checkbook. Long before the Catholic Church admitted their ungodly schools practices, the Canadian government divvied up $4 billion for their allowing those soulless, imprisonable crimes. A large share of these irreparable reparations went to every single proven survivor. What came from the church was barely nickels and dimes. I know a number of well-meaning religious zealots who are sprouting the belief that the Antichrist is now traveling the world trying to infiltrate every home. Like the unknowable galaxies, I know not from whence the divine interventions in my life came. But if there is an Antichrist, he might be so smart as to be hidden in plain sight somewhere in Rome. Have an open heart, an open mind, and you'll be that rare part of one of a kind.
Very good. Who wrote that?
Johnny.
Excellent.
I did.
Excellent. I thought it might have been a compendium of, but that was that was smack on the money. That should have been in the Canadian press.
Yes, it should have been. I mean, I sent it to a couple of friends who are, you know, up there,
You know. No, that was perfect. That was perfect. I honestly can't. Excuse me, John. I'm not a big fan of the Pope. Badoglio from Argentina, the real Pope, John, what the hell is it? Anyway, he's been held prisoner in the Vatican for almost 9 years now. Benedict, Pope Benedict the 16th. This guy's an imposter. But whatever, you said it as he should have said it. That was beautiful.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I didn't want to talk any politics, but I guess I should touch on this sort of fleeting me, if you don't mind, if we've got a few minutes, I don't like
five.
To talk politics.
Okay.
You know, I'm golf junkies. And, yes. You know, for years, and there's been a new golf site funded by the Arabs that Trump is promoting to go against the PGA. So they're trying to destroy the PGA, okay? And you know, for years, Jeff, Trump blamed the Saudis for 9/11. And now, in spite of the victims of 9/11 protesting, he not let them use his golf course for the anti-PGA event. He is proudly hosting and boasting. It's called the LIV Tournament, by the way. And it's Saudi sponsors, as I told you. And it's on his New Jersey golf course. And further embarrassing himself, he's displaying, which he no longer has earned, which is the presidential flag and seal. And I'm telling you, if hypocrisy or poison, that guy would be dead by now. But you know what? Except for a few jokes, honest to God, Jeff, I try to avoid talking about our politics and politicians. They are the monkeypox on our truly sick, incurable culture. But there was an article in the Washington Post last week, which is unbelievable, and it deserves to be shared. I didn't share it, but it deserves to be shared, because it seems to point out the biggest joke is on us, or especially its supporters, or anyone who has sincere but misguided sympathy for him. He is still getting the last laugh, and some folks, last dollar. Every knock on him is another cash register ring. And with the FBI raid on, as this article shows, it rang the loudest. He spends money only on millions from emails, which bring in more millions. His multi-million dollar legal bills are paid for by the Republican Party. He and cronies made millions on the unbuilt fence. All of this doesn't in the least upset or anger me. It actually makes me chuckle because, as you said earlier, Jeff, it is now, by God, the American way. Money, uber alles. It used to be an insult in America to call someone a P.T. Barnum who said there's a sucker born every minute. Now Donald is proving it's a compliment. But he outdoes P.T. Barnum. He proves that a sucker is born not every minute, but that millions are born every election. And you know what? I did a piece that is I'm really proud of at the height of the hate Trump stuff when he was president.
Right.
And I had pointed out that I could not fit Donald Trump into the 10 worst presidents. And he's way behind Billy Clinton, the two war criminal Bushes, way behind Lyndon Johnson. He's way behind them all. But he is by far the most destructive, distractive ex-president this country has ever seen. And if he runs, and now we've got four very active criminal investigations afoot of this guy, and if he runs in 2024, it may be for the Mexican border.
I'm going to send you a program I did last night with Susan Bradford. You need to hear this. He is worse than you can imagine. She has unearthed a lot of material. This is a ferocious researcher and journalist. I'll send you the recording. You'll want to listen to it if you get a few minutes. It exposes Trump totally.
And you know the really interesting...
Remember Abramoff? Remember Abramoff?
Yeah, absolutely.
She's got the whole story in there, John. It's all exposed. She's got it all.
Oh, well, send it. But I want to compliment you because it rarely, rarely happens. You were the first major on radio, on internet, years ago, who triumphed Trump as a possible change for the presidency and cited why. And, you know, I sort of agreed with you. And then along the way, when it all began to unravel, you were the first to say that you had made a mistake. That is so rare in this country.
Well, thank you, John, and it's true. And it happened on the first day he was in office. I remember it. I remember exactly.
Well,
and he never stopped lying.
You are amazing.
From that, yeah, well.
Okay, you send me that. You send me that, and I'll send you the Pope apologizing on YouTube, okay?
Deal. I have to ask. I don't want to open any doors, but is Sarita doing okay now? Are we?
Oh, she's doing wonderfully well. I'll tell you, one of the reasons she cried so much for a couple of days, she and her sister were never close, and if you read my book, she is the sister and the mother, the only two that I bash in the book for a number of reasons. Sarita could have had a major career in Hollywood, which her mother destroyed. Her sister was dreadfully envious of her. And what Sarita was crying over was what could have been and what wasn't. And now she is so happy, and she's so glad that I'm going to be on your show tonight. She said, please thank him for his kind thoughts about me. I love Jeff Rentz. Give him a hug and a kiss. You just get a hug from me.
Well, thank you, Johnny. Thank you. Tell her the same back. And I wish we could do this more often, but we'll do it again in 4 weeks. So you take care of yourself.
Yes, we certainly will. Okay, bye-bye.
Good night, John. The one and only John Barber, a true legend in the entertainment industry, but more than that, he's a legend in comedy. He's a legend in learning how to look and laugh at life. And that's special. We'll be right back. Hold on.